Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio and Archie Comics present Vampironica by Greg and Meg Smallwood. Narrated by Nanette Savard and a full cast. Cheryl Blossom's house in Pembroke Estates was well known to the student body at the local high school and several others in the area. Whenever her parents were out of town, and they seemed to be out of town a lot, Cheryl would throw a party. The Blossom house had a lovely flagstone patio with plenty of room for tables, chairs, and kegs. The pool was heated, and there was comfy furniture inside the house in case anyone felt like passing out.
All right, everybody.
The hostess came through the wide-open sliding glass door, clad in a bikini top and shorts, and brandishing two liquor bottles.
Who's up for some body shots?
That invitation got the immediate attention of a couple of Pembroke athletes who were helping one of their teammates execute a keg stand.
Whoa! Ooh, yeah, I'll go.
Me first!
They left him on the ground and headed towards Cheryl.
Easy, boys. There's plenty for... Everyone?
Something moved in the shadows at the side of the house. A figure stepped into the dim glow from the strings of party lights. His face was ghastly pale, his eyes red. Something dark stained his mouth and the front of his shirt. His lips drew back, revealing unnaturally long, unnaturally pointed teeth that glistened with what looked like blood.
No!
Hey! Ugly!
The creature whipped around as a woman in black ran from the house and landed a solid right cross to his jaw. The creature didn't fall and seemed to be gathering himself for another attack.
We can do this the easy way, or we can do it the hard way.
The woman narrowly evaded his raking claws.
Fine.
She raked his neck with her claws and buried her knee in his groin.
We'll do it the hard way.
She grabbed the creature by the front of his gory shirt and pulled a thick wooden stake from her jacket pocket. But before she could deliver the killing blow, another red-eyed demon dashed from the shadows. At first, no one wanted to get close enough to the pool to see what was happening in its depths, as the surface bubbled and roiled. As they crept closer, a massive red stain began to spread in the water, garish in the glow of the underwater lights. A sleek black head emerged from the red water and moved toward the shallow end of the pool, where Cheryl stood by the stairs.
Veronica Lodge?
Veronica stood up in the waist-deep water and pulled two dead vampires above the surface. Her eyes glowed red as she smiled, displaying perfect, pointed teeth.
Hey, Cheryl. Cool party.
2 days before Cheryl Blossom's pool party, Veronica was poised several feet off the ground, supported by her fellow Riverdale High School cheerleaders, shaking her pom-poms high in the air.
Break that ball! Make them fall! Across the goal line, take the ball!
With a small hop, she jackknifed her legs, pointed her toes, and landed lightly in the arms of Betty and Midge.
Go Bulldogs!
Back on her feet, Veronica continued to jump up and down with the rest of the squad, shaking her pom-poms and smiling brilliantly.
You make it look so easy, Ronnie.
Veronica turned toward Archie Andrews, still clad in his football gear and uniform. His teammate, Reggie Mantle, was right behind him.
Archiekins!
Veronica wrapped her arms around Archie, missing not only the surprised look on his face, but also the disgruntled glance from Betty.
So, where are you taking me for our date tonight?
Did we make plans?
Well, not yet. But I knew you just hadn't got around to asking.
To Veronica's dismay, Archie winced slightly.
I'm sorry, Ronnie. I've already got something going on with...
Betty Cooper grabbed Archie's arm, smiling triumphantly.
Betty.
I hope you don't mind me borrowing it for the night, Ron. It's just going to be a total chill night.
Popcorn, romantic comedies.
We can always swing by Pops to hang for a bit.
Veronica forced a fake smile that she hoped didn't look too snarly as she reached out, grabbed Reggie, and dragged him closer without even looking at him.
Don't be ridiculous. You two have fun. Reggie already asked me out anyway. Right, Reggie?
Yeah. You know it, babe.
Archie put one arm around a smiling Betty's shoulders as he waved goodbye with the other.
Okay, cool. Catch you guys later then.
Veronica allowed herself to pout as she watched them walk away. She forgot about Reggie until he put his arm around her waist.
Perfect timing, Ronnie. My parents are out of town all week.
She shrugged away from him.
Hey, what?
You want to go out? You can pick me up at 6. Daddy's having a client over, and I don't want to get stuck with them at dinner.
What about?
6 o'clock sharp, Reggie.
That evening, Veronica sat at her vanity in her bedroom, carefully putting the finishing touches on her lips. She glanced at her phone and the latest text from Reggie. It read, "Just passed Archie in his rust bucket on wheels," followed by a stuck-out tongue emoji. The previous text read, "Bringing the Jag," and before that, "On my way, babe." Veronica gazed at a picture tucked into the frame of her vanity mirror. Archie had his arm around her as they grinned at the photographer. She kissed the tip of her finger and touched it to the chest of Archie's image. She didn't want to smear lipstick on his face. Reggie's latest text read, "Be there in a sec."
Okay, I'm coming.
She flipped off the vanity lights and walked to the bedroom door. Veronica was vaguely aware that the house was unusually dark, considering her parents were entertaining a guest.
Okay, Daddy, I'm going out. I'll be back in a little while, but don't wait up.
She reached the bottom of the stairs and paused in the darkened foyer.
Daddy?
It sounded as though something had fallen hard in her father's study. The doors were slightly ajar, and dim light streamed from the crack. After a moment, Veronica cautiously approached.
Daddy? Is that you?
She stopped in front of the doors and peered through the gap. The only light came from the lamp on the desk, but she saw nothing out of the ordinary. Nothing moved or made a sound. She grasped the doorknob. Hiram and Hermione Lodge lay face down on the Persian carpet, deathly still.
Daddy! Mother!
Veronica ran to her father and knelt beside him. He didn't respond. She carefully pulled on his shoulder until he rolled onto his back.
Oh, God. No. Daddy!
Hiram Lodge's skin was devoid of color, and his eyes were rolled back in his head. His immaculate shirt collar was stained red with blood that dribbled from two holes in his neck. Veronica was frozen with shock and grief until a shadow from behind her darkened her father's face. She slowly looked over her shoulder.
You must be Veronica.
A large hand closed over her throat and hauled her off the floor.
Don't worry, my dear.
His skin was thin and white and wrinkled, his eyes glowing red from within. He backed Veronica into the desk, and she fell across its top.
This will all be over soon.
His lips pulled back from his red, glistening, pointed teeth in a hideous grin, and his breath reeked like a dead body in a dumpster.
I promise.
She felt his teeth stab into her neck, and instantly her vision was obscured by a red miasma. She seemed to be floating near the ceiling, seeing herself flattened on the desk, the monster hunched over her, her parents dead on the Persian carpet.
Surrender.
He killed my parents.
Give up.
But Veronica Lodge never gives up.
In spite of her pain and confusion, her hand reached behind her, flailing, searching, finally finding, on his desk, in its holder, her father's antique fountain pen. She gripped it hard.
Enough!
And jammed it into the creature's neck. He staggered back, clawing at the pen. Veronica rolled off the desk, slammed into her attacker, and bolted for the door. She crossed the foyer, snatched her car keys from the table by the front door, and yanked it open. Fortunately, her Beamer was in the driveway. Veronica leaned back against the leather headrest. She touched the ragged, sticky holes in her neck and thought briefly about checking them out in the visor mirror, but decided it was more important to get into town and get help. She turned on the headlights.
You have got to be kidding me!
The murderous creature was just a few yards in front of the car, eyes glowing, face and shirt streaked with gore. Veronica saw red again as she jammed the transmission into drive, but it was from pure fury this time. She bared her teeth.
You are so dead!
And released the emergency brake. The body rolled up the hood, over the windshield, and off the car as Veronica peeled out down the driveway and onto the road. She glanced over her shoulder.
That's right, dumbass! Car beats face!
She looked forward again, right into a pair of oncoming headlights.
Oh!
Veronica stared sideways through grass across pavement at the alloy wheel of an unfamiliar car. She laboriously hauled herself up to a sitting position. She was on the shoulder of the road, surrounded by fragments of glass. Her groggy brain was slow to sort out the sight before her, but she recognized the rear portion of her Beamer. The front of it was a mangled mess, smoke wafting from under the gaping hood, the windshield shattered and streaked with blood. The front of the car next to her was just as mangled, but it suddenly dawned on her whose car it must be.
Reggie.
Veronica crawled off the shoulder on hands and knees and used the passenger side door of Reggie's Jag to pull herself up.
Oh, no.
He was leaning back in the seat, eyes closed, mouth slack. The airbag was slowly deflating in his lap, but broken glass from the windshield had cut his face, and it slowly trickled onto the collar of his polo shirt.
Reggie, are you okay?
There was a musty, metallic smell in the air, and an ecstatic warmth spread within Veronica, better than making out, better than finding the perfect pair of shoes.
You smell so good.
She leaned in the window, wanting to get closer to the blood, needing to find more of it.
This will all be over soon.
No!
Veronica staggered back from the car and stumbled into the woods. Had she been about to do to Reggie what that horrible thing in her father's study had done to her? And what had he done? Turned her into a killer like him? How was that possible? That feeling she'd had when she smelled Reggie's blood was so overpowering. Was that feeling only going to get stronger? She came to a clearing in the woods that was flooded with moonlight and stopped. For the first time, she noticed that her blouse was ripped in several places and covered with dark stains. Fortunately, it wasn't her absolute favorite blouse, but still. It occurred to her that maybe the blouse was shredded because she had been thrown through the windshield of her car during the crash. But if that was the case, why wasn't she dead?
That's just crazy. Pull yourself together, Veronica.
She nervously ran a hand down her arm.
Ow!
And was shocked to see a good-sized piece of glass sticking out of it.
Oh, God.
Gingerly, she pinched the bloody fragment between her fingers. Even in the moonlight, Veronica could see that the wound was pretty deep and oozing blood, and she was starting to think that she should rip a sleeve off her ruined blouse to wrap it up. When the blood stopped flowing and even seemed to be sucked back into her skin.
No way.
As she stared, riveted, the deeper layers of skin in the gash appeared to swell and pull in and the outer layers began to knit together from the ends to the center, like the double zippers on her Louis Vuitton suitcase.
What is happening to me?
When Reggie finally came to and took in his surroundings, the shattered windshield, the crumpled hood of the Jag, the flaccid airbag, there was only one thought in his mind. The minute his parents found out, he was toast. He was shoving the airbag out of the way, looking for his phone, when a shadow fell across him.
Huh. Well.
It was an older guy, pretty well dressed, hair combed back. He had really bad breath, though.
Looks like you could use a hand.
Get a grip, Veronica. You can handle this.
Despite some serious misgivings, Veronica had decided there was nothing she could do but return to the scene of the crash.
You're gonna march right back up there, grab Reggie's cell phone, and call the police.
She just hoped she could resist chomping on him. The road came into sight ahead of her.
I'm sure they'll be able to sort all of this.
She came out of the woods onto the shoulder of the road and stopped.
What?
There was no crash. There was nothing in the road as far as she could see in either direction.
This doesn't make any sense. Our cars were totaled. No one could have... Unless...
Veronica's stomach lurched. She turned in circles, peering into the shadows around her.
That fanged freak must still be alive!
Barely thinking, she turned and started running down the road toward Riverdale. Something was watching her as she ran. Something in the woods, but not on the ground. High up in a tree, a bat the size of a small dog hung upside down, following her fleeing form with large, glowing red eyes. Veronica approached the Andrews house, hugging herself from fear and the night chill. There were no lights on in the front of the house.
Please be home, Archie.
She started up the front walk, but stopped abruptly when she remembered how tattered, blood-stained, and generally unpresentable she was.
Oh, right. Maybe not the best idea to go through the front door.
Veronica stepped off the walk and cut across the lawn to the side of the house. As she approached the corner, she could see dim light coming from an open window at the back.
I can't let Mr. and Mrs. Andrews see me like this. How would I even begin to explain what happened? They'd probably just think I was on drugs.
She moved cautiously toward the window, hoping to see Archie in the room.
Son of a...
Archie was there, all right, his face illuminated by the light from the TV screen. But Betty Cooper was snuggled up next to him, clutching his arm, her eyes wide with fear.
Total chill night my ass. Ugh, pretending to be scared? That play is as old as your last manicure, you little faker.
I don't know how I let you talk me into watching a scary movie.
Oh, come on, Betty. This is a classic. B-movie making at its finest.
On the screen, the main character, a Victorian-era vampire hunter, approached an open coffin. He held out an elaborate crucifix in one hand and a crude wooden stake in the other.
I set your soul free from...
Betty buried her face in Archie's shoulder.
You're enjoying this, aren't you?
Maybe just a little bit.
Archie moved his arm to the back of the sofa, and they leaned in, closing their eyes.
What was that?
He frowned and moved his arm so he could turn toward the open window.
Archie Andrews, you better not be messing with me.
Honest, that wasn't me.
Then what was it?
Archie rose and went to the window. All he could see outside was the moonlit lawn and the side of the neighbor's house.
I don't know, but that probably woke my parents. I better get you back home.
Only Dilton Doily would have been walking the deserted corridors of Riverdale High on a Saturday morning, carrying a cardboard box full of graduated cylinders, Erlenmeyer flasks, and other basic chemistry equipment. He paused before the door to the boiler room and nudged it open with his foot.
What the?
Daylight from the small, grimy window revealed a figure hunched in the far corner of the room next to metal shelves full of cleaning supplies. It was a woman. Her head was buried in her arms, which rested on her blanket-covered knees. Glossy black hair spilled over her shoulders.
Veronica?
Dilton didn't know why he suddenly felt uneasy, but he advanced cautiously.
Is that you?
Her head shot up. Dilton staggered back. Her hands were raised, fingers crooked like claws, and he could have sworn that her eyes glowed red.
Veronica?
Her snarl turned into a frown. She rubbed her temples and looked at him with puffy, mascara-smeared eyes that definitely weren't glowing.
What are you doing here, Dilton? It's the weekend.
I needed the school's equipment to create a particle... Well, you see, I'm developing my own Bose-Einstein condensate model based on...
Forget I asked, you nerd.
Veronica threw the blanket aside and put a hand against the wall.
Hey, are you okay? You don't look so hot.
She got one foot under her, then the other, and slowly rose.
You know, that's the first time I've ever...
Veronica's eyes rolled back into her head.
Heard that.
Veronica!
Veronica strolled around an obviously high-end handbag boutique, but wasn't enjoying it as much as she normally did. The decor was all white marble, chrome, and stark white neon tubes. It looked more like an operating room than an elegant retail establishment. She turned toward the center of the store, where freestanding displays held shoulder bags on hooks and handbags on tiered shelves. She caught something out of the corner of her eye that stopped her in her tracks and made her turn slowly to look over her shoulder. A table held rows of multicolored clutches. Above them rose pedestals of various heights. The lower and upper ones held large handbags. The middle pedestals held three severed heads, slowly dripping gore on the clutches below. Archie was on the left, Jughead on the right, Betty in the middle. Their eyes were closed. They looked relaxed.
I'm afraid we're going to have to ask you to leave, ma'am.
Veronica spun. The horrible creature from her father's study stood there in a bespoke three-piece black suit with a matching tie and pocket square in gray. His French cuff shirt was crimson.
We don't allow animals inside the store.
But I'm not an animal.
The man grinned. He still had fangs.
Are you sure?
Suddenly, Veronica's mouth filled with a nauseating metallic taste that made her salivate and gag. She clapped her hand over her mouth just as blood started pouring out. It oozed through her fingers. Her gums ached, and she could feel her teeth elongating. Something soft fell past her bare arm, and she looked down to see a sizable chunk of her hair drifting to the floor. There was a horrible, burning, itching sensation between her shoulder blades. Veronica turned her back to a nearby wall mirror to see what was causing her agony and caught sight of her face. Wispy clumps of hair still clung to her scalp and hung over enormous, pointed ears. Ragged, sharp teeth protruded through wrinkled lips, still dripping with blood. Her nose had flattened, and the nostrils were large and convoluted, like she had two more ears in the middle of her face. As she watched, the beginnings of clawed, leathery wings ripped through the back of her blouse.
You're pathetic, Ronnie.
Archie's severed head was looking at her, one eyebrow raised in disdain.
Look at you. Just disgusting.
You said it, Archie.
Betty's upper lip was curled in a sneer. Jughead's eyes grew wide, and his mouth dropped open.
I think I've lost my appetite.
Veronica didn't know where she was when she opened her eyes, but it wasn't a handbag boutique that also sold severed heads, which was a good thing. The ceiling above was acoustic tile with a standard fluorescent light fixture. She was lying on a hard table, and there was an IV stand next to her holding a bag that dripped clear fluid through a needle into her left arm. There were leather cuffs around her wrists, attached to substantial chains that were secured under the table. Dilton Doily stood a few feet away, looking nervous and holding up a cross of all things.
What is this?
IV therapy. Your iron levels were low. I brought you back to my lab when you passed out.
I mean, why do you have me chained to a table, Dilton?
Hematophagia, reduced heart rate, accelerated regeneration, sensitivity to UV light. I know what you are.
What? Cooler than you?
A vampire.
The truth she had been denying since the night before hit Veronica like a ton of bricks, and her face crumpled. Dilton's expression softened as he turned to a counter behind him.
Seriously, Dilton, you can't tell anyone. Not until I've figured out exactly what's happening to me.
Dilton turned back and held out a cup. The bandage on the crook of Dilton's left arm and the intoxicating aroma coming from the cup told Veronica all she needed to know.
If I let you out of those chains and give you this blood, will you promise not to bite me?
Veronica sat up abruptly. The chains and cuffs flopped under the table as she reached for the cup.
I promise.
A wide-eyed Dilton kept his cross raised as he handed it over.
Thank you.
Incredible. How did this happen?
It was a client of Daddy's.
Dilton took the cup from Veronica and set it on the counter, then carefully tucked the cross into the waistband of his pants. Veronica moved her legs off the table.
He attacked me at my home. My parents, too. They're dead, I think. And Reggie. Oh, God. I forgot about Reggie.
We should go to the police!
And tell them what exactly, genius? Some weirdo sucked the blood out from my parents and turned me into a vampire?
Oh, good point. When you put it that way. Here, let me get that IV out of your arm.
Veronica looked down at it as though she had forgotten it.
No, it's okay, I got it.
She yanked the first aid tape off.
Wait!
And pulled out the needle. A drop of blood welled briefly, then disappeared again. The tiny hole and the bruise under it faded as they watched. Veronica smiled smugly at Dilton, who pushed his glasses up his nose.
That is freaking weird.
I know, right?
Veronica slid off the table and stood.
Whoa.
But had to lean on the table when the room seemed to tilt.
I need to go back home and...
What you need is a game plan. Why don't you crash at my house while we figure out what to do next? I can give you some more blood in the morning if you need it.
Veronica looked into Dilton's earnest eyes. Yes, he was a nerd, but he was a kindly nerd, and she had to admit that, all things considered, a kindly nerd was exactly the friend and ally that she needed right now.
I can't believe I'm saying this, but yeah, that sounds nice. Thanks, Dilton.
Dilton had hoped they could get in the front door and up the stairs without alerting his mother, but Mrs. Doily had an internal early warning system that would put NORAD to shame.
Come in, come in!
Dilton and Veronica squeezed past Mrs. Doily as she held the screen door open for them. Dilton had given Veronica one of his own sweatshirts to cover her gory blouse. It advertised the Riverdale High Math Club. Mrs. Doily smiled broadly at Veronica and clasped her hands.
Oh, you're so pretty! Will you be joining us for dinner, dear? Kenny, come in here and meet Dilton's new friend.
Dilton grabbed Veronica's hand and skillfully maneuvered her past his mother toward the stairs to the second floor.
No time, Mom. We've got a big science project to work on.
Veronica smiled politely as Dilton pulled her up the stairs.
But dinner!
Worth half our grade. We'll grab leftovers later.
Okay then, sweetie. You two let us know if you need anything.
Thanks, Mom.
Dilton led the way down the hall to a door bearing a sign that read, Caution, Radiation Area. It was a typical nerd room. The walls were covered with a portrait of Sir Isaac Newton, a black-and-white picture of Albert Einstein sticking his tongue out, a large Hubble telescope poster of the Crab Nebula, a colorful periodic table of the elements. There were shelves of books on the walls as well, and stacks of books on the floor. Dilton had a large desk to accommodate two big computer monitors, and under the desk was a server-sized tower containing what Veronica assumed was a homemade computer. There was barely space in the room for a twin bed that was shoved in the far corner.
Your mom seems sweet, but I have a feeling whatever she's making for dinner won't help my appetite.
No, she wouldn't serve anything raw enough for you. Anyway, dinner with my parents is the least of our concerns. You and I have a lot to go over.
Dilton sat down in his office chair, but instead of firing up his computer, he opened a large, antique-looking book on the desk in front of him. Veronica walked over to look at the title page. It featured a leering, fanged face under the words, Vampire, a true history of fact and legend.
I did some research while you were passed out. Since vampire antiquity isn't within my general field of knowledge, I had to go a little outside my collection. Romanian folklore tells of two different types of vampires.
On the next page was an old woodcut image of a man in medieval clothing holding a terrified-looking woman. The man had large fangs.
One type is referred to as the Moroi. The Moroi are undead revenants brought back to life by the very thing that killed them, a vampire's bite.
You mean my parents might still be alive?
Dilton looked at her with a concerned, slightly pained expression.
Alive, but not alive. Dead, but not dead. Undead.
The next woodcut image was of a naked, man-shaped monster with sharp teeth and pointy ears. There were bat wings along the backs of his raised arms.
The other type is called the Strigoi. Strigoi are living vampires, cursed souls who drink the blood of humans to survive.
Veronica leaned over Dilton's shoulder, remembering the horrible dream, the appearance she had taken on in the handbag boutique.
The Strigoi are much more powerful. A master Strigoi can exhibit strength over the Moroi by holding them under a kind of spell, thus turning a typically raucous horde of Moroi into a single-minded army of undead. Early Romanian myth sometimes referred to the Strigoi as sorcerers or shapeshifters due to their ability to appear as animals or even other people.
Okay, so how do you stop them? Stake through the heart?
That, or decapitation. They also have a weakness for garlic, silver, holy water, or crosses. According to this, killing the master Strigoi will lift the undead curse and return the living and non-living back to normal.
Veronica pointed to an illustration on the page, an ornate circular medal featuring a rampant dragon and a cross.
What's that?
It's the insignia for a society of knights called the Order of the Dragon, founded by the King of Hungary in the 15th century. Vlad Dracul, a Romanian noble, took his name from the order.
On the next page was a woodcut of a man with long, wavy hair under a strange cap with rolled-up sides. His nose was long, as was his mustache, and his eyes were cold. Behind him were human figures on sticks, kind of like jumping jack puppets.
His son, Vlad Dracula, was known for impaling his enemies on stakes in the ground and leaving them to die.
Ew. Points for creativity, I guess.
He's possibly the first Strigoi, originator of the undead curse.
Veronica stood up straight and ran her fingers through her hair.
Okay, so you said that killing the master Strigoi would undo the curse, right? If we kill the master, everything goes back to normal in Riverdale?
According to this, yeah.
Veronica smiled at Dilton and pointed at the book.
I think I know who the master is. We're going to need some weapons.
Oh, great game, Archie.
Thanks, Bets.
Most of the players had left the field after the game at Midvale High. Archie and Betty were seated at the far end of the emptying bleachers, both of them still dressed to play or cheer. Betty was frowning at her cell phone.
You get a hold of Ronnie?
I've been blowing up her phone all day, but she hasn't called or texted back. It's not like her to miss a game.
Archie put a comforting hand on Betty's shoulder.
I'm sure she had a good reason. Maybe a family emergency?
She's probably still salty about our date last night.
Archie suddenly frowned and glanced around.
Hey, have you seen Reggie? He was just here a second ago. Dude was a beast out there. I need to thank him for having my back more than a few times tonight.
I think I saw him run off with some girl.
In the shadows, under a line of trees that bordered the playing field, two bodies were locked in an embrace. The taller figure still wore full football gear under a Riverdale jersey that bore the name Mantle. The smaller figure, in the Midvale cheerleader uniform, was engulfed by him, her long blonde hair spilling over his arm. Two kids taking advantage of a chance opportunity to make out. But the cheerleader wasn't responding. Her arms hung limply, and her feet weren't touching the ground. She fell to the ground like a broken puppet, and Reggie turned away. In the dappled light coming through the trees, his teeth glistened and his eyes glowed in similar shades of red. Betty and Jughead walked slowly after leaving Pops. Betty was staring in frustration at her cell phone. Jughead was digging into a bag of popcorn that he had picked up on his way out of the diner to wash down the hot fudge sundae he had eaten inside.
Hey, Ron, it's me again. Call me when you get this. I just want to make sure everything's okay.
You still haven't gotten a hold of her?
No. And now Midge and Valerie are ignoring my calls, too. What in the world is going on?
Maybe we're close to a full moon. People always get weird around a full moon.
They started walking again, oblivious to the three posters that were taped to the inside of one of Pop's huge windows.
I wouldn't worry, Betty. If I know Ron, she'll probably make a dramatic entrance at Cheryl's party tonight. I mean, heck, Riverdale, Pembroke, Midvale, everyone's invited.
The posters that they had left behind featured smiling pictures and the words missing and last seen at.
I hear it's even going to be a catered affair.
Oh, Juggy.
By late afternoon, Veronica and Dilton were sitting in his ancient, boxy four-door hatchback near the service entrance at the rear of the Lodge mansion. Veronica drained the last drops from a glass of thick, dark liquid.
Jeez, Dilly, this tastes like old hot dogs and farts. What have you been eating lately?
Dilton shook his head and rooted through a duffel bag full of tactical gear that he had picked up at an outdoor store.
It's just a little leftover pig blood from the lab. I didn't have time to draw any more since somebody took too long shopping.
Veronica smirked and waved a finger at him.
First of all, one can never take too long shopping.
While Dilton was picking up walkie-talkies and who knew what else, Veronica had hit the boutiques to secure some gear of her own.
Secondly, let's not have any more disgusting surprises like pig blood, Dilton. For your own sake.
Dilton's eyebrows rose above the frames of his glasses as he handed Veronica a walkie-talkie.
I'll research some better alternatives. Here's your walkie. I'll keep it silent on over and outs and respond on overs, okay? Got it?
Veronica smiled.
Got it. Vampire or not, I think I can handle one old dude. With a little luck, I'll be feasting on some filet mignon tonight.
You're not going to need much luck with the arsenal we've got. I didn't even know you could buy holy water.
Oh, Dilly. Everything's got a price.
So, you ready to do this?
Veronica was resplendent in a black satin jacket with a stand-up collar. She had pushed the sleeves up to reveal matching fingerless gloves. Her tight black stretch jeans were tucked into black lace-up boots. The boots were more British bobby than sleek and sexy, but Veronica felt there was a pretty good chance that she might be doing some fighting, not to mention possibly fleeing for her life.
Am I ready to do this? Is a lodge closet couture?
Veronica made her way from the back of the house to the front, senses on high alert, hearing nothing. With her heart in her throat, she entered the foyer and approached the open doors to her father's study. There was no one, alive or dead, in the room. That was a relief, but only temporarily. Even if her parents weren't dead in the strictest sense, they still weren't her parents anymore, according to Dilton. Maybe she could get them back, but first, she had to get the master. She pulled the walkie-talkie from her pocket.
I'm inside. Looks empty in here. Over.
Check the basement. Vampires prefer a dark, dry environment. Over.
Veronica walked back down the hallway to a door in the wall under the main staircase.
Oh, yuck.
Wafting up from the basement, the musty odor of dirt and mold assailed her nostrils. She pinched them together and started down the stairs.
I think it's safe to say I won't run into any of the cleaning staff down here.
Veronica paused at the bottom and flipped a wall switch that turned on small sconces by the wine rack.
Oh. My. God.
A large, ornately carved coffin sat in front of the rack. Veronica approached cautiously. With each step, the deeply carved insignia on the lid of the coffin became clearer.
Order of the Dragon. What was that?
To the right of the coffin, movement caught her eye. The dirt floor seemed to be buckling and crumbling. Then something rounded poked through. It looked like an elbow. The entire arm broke free and started digging out the head attached to it. A couple of feet away, a foot kicked its way out, and everywhere the floor started slowly bubbling like an overheated fondue pot.
Oh no. This is not good.
Dilton sat on the hood of his car near the service entrance, watching the door like a hawk, walkie-talkie at the ready.
Huh?
A car was making a left into the driveway. A red late 90s convertible.
Archie? Oh no, this is not good.
Dilton hopped off the hood of his car and sprinted for the front of the house. Archie stood before the imposing front door, looking at the rather large bouquet of flowers he carried. He hoped Veronica had been out of touch just because she was ticked off at him over his date with Betty, and not because she was in some sort of trouble. Either way, a peace offering was a good excuse to visit the lodge home.
Psst! Archie!
Archie peered into a decorative hedge a few feet away.
Dilton? What are you doing in the bushes?
Hiram Lodge stood in the doorway, smiling broadly. The long, sharp canines were hard to miss.
Archie, my boy, so good to see you.